Genesis chapter 6, the flood of Noah. The worldwide flood, by the way. Got a slide for you, Chris. Are you ready? Here it comes. Go. Did you know that there are over 200 cultures around the planet that have in their sort of ethos or in their myths or whatever, a worldwide flood? This will be on our website. If this is interesting to you, you can zoom in on those pictures and read about those. Why do so many people who have a very long sort of ethnicity to them, why is there right in the middle a flood story? And the answer is because the flood happened. Shem, Ham, and Japheth, when they get off, we'll see next week in chapter 7, and then they go to the various portions of the world, and then they begin, and they never forgot that. We're going to see, probably not tonight, but perhaps next week, we're going to see that probably pre-flood Earth had one continent. One continent. And very likely it was the cracking open of the plate tects, the plates that we know today as the North American plate, South American plate, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge and so on, the one under India that's currently thrusting up the Himalayas and so on. Pangaea is very likely one singular continent. Why do you believe that? And the answer is because in the millennial reign, there's going to be no more sea. I believe that there's going to be one unified continent in the millennial reign, which would call for some pretty amazing plate tectonics again. Like I said, next week in chapter 7, I'm going to show you the earth still bears the marks of a significant, that's not even the right word, a completely bone-rattling foundation redistributing of everything. The flood of Noah didn't happen because of the rain, 40 days and 40 nights. That's not what flooded the earth. It's when these great big plates cracked open. And remember in Genesis 1, that God said the firmament, there's going to be in the midst of the waters. So there's waters above, that's the canopy, and waters below. Those waters below, when they were released by this sudden jerking and breaking apart of the Pangaea, is what flooded the earth. But there, right there, as you see, there it is. And then also I'm going to show you this. You talk about Noah and his ark, and then go ahead. You get this in your mind. Isn't that cute? Hey, it looks a little crowded on that ark, you know. How did they get all that on there? It's that sort of fanciful sort of understanding. The ark was maybe real small, and there's no way they could get all kajillion species on there. We're going to show you tonight, number one, that boat wasn't that big. It was this big. Go. This is pretty amazing. This is the Ark Encounter. This is Ken Ham's Creation Museum in Williamstown, Kentucky. And they took the measurements that we're going to see tonight, and they built one. There it is, 510 feet long. Go. Another shot of it. 510 feet long, more than 50 feet high. That's how big it was. It was absolutely huge. Go. Another shot of it. Look at the size of that monster. Now remember, too, this ship did not have to be a navigable, if that's the right word, vessel. All it really had to do is be like a barge. And so ship people who design ships, they look at these proportions and they find out that this was a pretty good proportion for the size of ship that it was. And even this, in its current state right now, made out of wood, is the largest wood boat, I believe, ever constructed. And there it is. Look to the right-hand side of the hull. That's the door. That's the door that the Bible says that he, the Lord, shut. And when the Lord shut the door, no man can open. Hit our go button. There's kind of a cross-section of it. Three floors, as we'll see here in a minute. Hit the up arrow. We'll leave the up arrow there. And now let's dig in. Are you ready? We're in chapter 6, book of Genesis, verse 1. Now it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth. By the way, do the math and remember Adam and Eve lived to be 900 years old. How many kids could they have in that time? And I saw a bell curve, or a what's called an actuarial sort of chart and pace, that because their kids lived very long and they had lots of kids, and then those kids lived very long, that conceivably within 15 generations, there could have been upwards of 3 billion people on the planet. So it doesn't take long for lots and lots of folks to be around. So it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God, now you might want to circle that, and the Hebrew word here is B'nai, or B-E-N-A-I, B'nai Elohim, which means these are angels. Every other place in the Old Testament, B'nai Elohim is used, employed. That is speaking of angels. So that the sons of God saw that the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves. In your margin right here, would you write 2 Peter 2, verses 4 through 5, comma, and Jude, verses 5 and 6. 2 Peter 2, verses 4 and 5, comma, and Jude, 5 and 6. Now, a lot of people don't believe that these are angels, really fallen angel. And by the way, how do you say fall or fallen in Hebrew? You say nephal, nephal. And so the nephalim is the term that's attributed to those that were offspring. There are people that say, are you saying that angels somehow became, I don't know, corporeal in some sense? They got some sort of anatomy to them, physiology to them, and they could somehow procreate? I believe that's exactly what it's saying. The book of Enoch is not considered in the canon of Scripture, but it's a very, very old book. And perhaps like the Maccabees are to the intertestamental time, before Jesus was born, between Malachi and Matthew, it's not considered canon except by some of the Catholic Church. But it's often looked at as a kind of a reliable history. That's your Apocrypha, 1st and 2nd Maccabees, what have you. The book of Enoch may well be something similar. It's held in high esteem, as I said, not seen as canon, but they found copies of the book of Enoch in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So in the Dead Sea Scrolls, it goes into more information on who these Nephal, fallen ones, plural, Nephilim. Now the Bible says that they were giants. The book of Enoch has some description, and boy were they giants. Not sort of Shaquille O'Neal giant, but giants in the terms of maybe 100 or more feet tall. They were scary and they were frightening. And there are some accounts in the book of Enoch and in other places too that fill in some of the story. And so when we're talking giants here, it's not like Shaquille O'Neal or even somebody like a Goliath. They were much taller and potentially upwards of 100 feet tall. Whew, that is amazing. All right, hold your finger here. Let's actually turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. 2 Peter, Hebrews, James, Peter. 2 Peter chapter 2, let's look at this. Peter knew this, and some people think that he might even be in referencing to the book of Enoch. Don't know. But here's what Peter said. For God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down into hell. That word there is Tartarus. We would know this as the abuso. The abuso. And delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment. Now, this is an idea that they are going to be in this place, in the bottomless pit, in the abuso, until judgment day. Revelation 9, remember, says that the abuso is opened up, and many of those fallen angels, those demons, come flying out. But it would appear that there are some demons so heinous that God says, I'm not letting you out, not even at the midpoint of the great tribulation. You're going to stay, and this is what Peter is saying, they're going to be in this Tartarus, or below hell, the idea of the abuso, until judgment day. Oh my, these must be really some kind of, is unique the right word, of demons. And look where he connects them to when this happened. Verse 5. And did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah. This is the age that we're talking about. One of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly. So here's another insight. Noah, when he was putting this boat together, he was also preaching. And could you imagine it? Remember, in our study in chapters 1 and 2, it didn't rain and precipitate on the earth like it does today before the flood. It didn't rain. So the whole weather system was a very different sort of situation. In fact, the Bible says that the water came up from a mist up out from the ground. And so the idea of falling rain was not really known by anyone. So when Noah's hammering this amazing ark together, 510 feet, potentially feet long, what were people doing? What are you building? I get a boat because we have lakes around here. What are you building one like that for? What would he say? Because there is a great judgment coming, as we'll see, a great judgment of water. It's going to rain. And anybody seeing him on that scaffolding, it's going to what? Yeah, it's going to flood so much that the entire earth is going to be covered in a universal worldwide flood. Ha! Rain, what is that, Noah? No one has ever seen that before. You must be drinking your bath water because you are nuts. Peter says that Noah, was a preacher of righteousness. And here's the sad part. Nobody believed him. Now go to Jude, a couple books to the right in front of the book of Revelation. Only one chapter. More to the story. Jude, verse 5 and 6. Let's see what happened. Jude is the half-brother of Jesus. James was also a half-brother of Jesus. Jude and James were full-blood brothers. Look down there at verse number 5. Jude says, I want to remind you, though you once knew this, that the Lord, having saved the people out of the land of Egypt, afterward destroyed those who did not believe. Now, verse 6. And the angels who did not keep their proper domain. A lot of people wondering, now, what does that mean, proper domain? Is that a geographic location? They went out of bounds? Or their proper domain, did they break through from their multidimensional system and somehow break the domain of being having not a physical body to somehow making a physical body happen, thereby being able to transmit genetic matter? Maybe. But they did not keep their proper domain, but they left their own abode. And this could be a notion of a geographic location, but it also could mean what they were wearing. Were they wearing now a new house, as it were, a new tent, as it were, a new actual body? Don't know, can't say for sure. But Jude goes on, He, the Lord, has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness. He is also referencing it's below hell. Under darkness, for the, here it is, judgment of the great day. Here again, these particular demons somehow connected with Noah, who left their domain, left their proper sort of being, of an angelic sort of existence, and somehow their anatomy changed and their physiology became apparent, and they went in to the daughters of men, and Nephilim were born to them, the giants, the genetic freaks. Now remember, back in Genesis 3, Eve, your seed, your genealogy, is going to crush his head. That's going to be Jesus. Your seed, serpent or Nakash, is going to bruise his heel. And I believe Lucifer was paying attention. And I believe that Lucifer was trying to pollute the genealogy of the humans to make null and void God's promise that Eve's seed, her genetics, if you will, her genome, was going to crush his head. It's complete conjecture on my part, but it is a fascinating understanding. We're going to see here in a minute, when God selects Noah, there's a peculiar description. He was a man perfect in his generations. Is that the Lord knowing that by the time we get to our day, that they will have mapped the human genome? Let's find out. Or chapter 6, are we still in verse 1? I guess we are. Came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, daughters were born to them, and the sons of God, the B'nai Elohim, this is always referring to angels, saw that the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all of whom they chose. Now you have 2 Peter 2, Jude verses 5 and 6. Now you know who they were. Verse 3. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with men forever. This is a little misleading. Really what it means is, there is a great contention between humans and me. Why? He knew it was coming when they ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And now it seems that every man, as the Bible is going to say, on their heart was evil continually. This is not God saying, you know, I'm sick and tired of you humans. I believe what it's saying is, humans and God will not always be in contention. Why? Because God has a plan, a redemption for all of humans. I think that's what it means here. My spirit shall not strive with men forever. And in my margin, yes, because Jesus will come soon. For he is indeed flesh, humans, yet his days shall be 120 years. And then there are some people that see this 120 years and they go, okay, then the ark is going to be built. So the ark must have taken 120 years to build. Technically speaking, the Bible does not say how long it was. But from right here, okay, 120 years. And some people think, well, that's the Lord saying, that's how much time you have, Noah, so you better get after it. Well, maybe, but I don't think so. Bible doesn't say how long. In Genesis 5, verse 32, Noah was 500 years old when he had Shem. Chapter 7 of Genesis says that Noah was 600 years old when the flood started. So the ark maybe took 100 years? No, more to the story. In verse 18, as we'll see here in a minute, in this chapter, God says that this boat is for, quote, you, your sons, plural, your wife and your sons' wives and you. So when he gets this commission, how old were those boys? Well, they were at least marrying age. So that maybe shrinks the time even more. Noah likely started after his boys were born, certainly, and maybe even after they had taken a wife. So maybe are they in their 20s or even 30s? That would put the construction of the ark maybe 50 to 70 years. And by the time Noah's crew gets to the other, oh, I forgot to say, there's the size of that boat. If this took 100 years, if we started at the stern, actually you're looking at the stern right there. See that little fin sticking up? That is something that the builders there at the Creation Institute, they believe that you don't need a sail or even a rudder. All this boat had to do was float. That's all it had to do. But if you put some kind of a vane, or I should say a fin on it, if there was a prevailing wind, then that fin would always sort of move in if the direction of the wind is coming this way. That fin would always line up, kind of like a rocket fin or an airplane fin. So they have put in the fin that may or not be in Noah's design. But if there was a bit of a fin, what that would do is they would take the prevailing wind and point the bow of the ship into the coming waves. If you didn't have that, then you would wallow in between the waves, and that would be a very seasick sort of existence. But if that fin did work as a kind of a straightening device, like a fin on a rocket, and then it would then point the bow of the ship into each of the waves, and it would make for a more pleasant trip. Anyway, that's what they have decided. But anyway, 500 feet ago, when you started at the other end, what happens to wood in the elements for 50, 60 years? By the time they got done with the other end, they'd have to hustle down and sort of refit some of the fittings and retar it and what have you. I don't know, but the climate was a lot different. I don't know. I don't know that it took 120 years. I don't know that it took 100 years. My hunch, 25 maybe to 50 years. And if so, did they get a lot of work done? Now, a lot of people think, was it just Noah and the boys? Could have been. But remember, when we put all the people's ages up there, we saw Adam live 930 years. Remember all the people, how long they lived and so on. It could have been a very large extended family that Noah had that could be helping him build. His father and grandfather and all the kids there, he might have hired somebody. Who knows? Anyway, but it was a big old boat, wasn't it? Verse 4. There were giants on the earth in those days and also afterward. When the sons of God, there it is, B'nai Elohim, these are fallen angels, came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Remember, Nephal means to fall. A plural of fall, of the fallen, would be Nephalim, Nephilim, and that's where the term comes from. They came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. And those were the mighty men that were of old, the men of renown. Now, that's not a good thing. They were very famous, and they were greatly feared. And if the book of Enoch is anything accurate or near it, what would 100-foot-tall humanoid-type people look like? How much food would they eat? Would they eat perhaps entire regions bare of animals? Who knows? Were they starving all the time? It's a frightening thing to basically sort of grasp. It was awful, that's the point. And the enemy was trying to mess up the genome and mess up the prophecy of Genesis 3, verse 15. Let's see what happens. Verse 5, then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. I think with the advent of the internet, what sort of imagery can you download and look at 24/7 if you wanted to? What is available to be seen and partaken of? Everything. I don't know what the dark web is. I've never searched it out, but I understand it's not polite and it doesn't pull any punches whatsoever. And I believe, like Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be right before I return. And I think the internet has now given humans literally this ability that the intent and the thoughts of man's heart is only evil continually. I think we're close. Verse 6. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man, really mankind, whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air. For I am sorry that I have made them. So God's perfect creation, once in perfect balance, is coming apart at the seams. And if there are actually supernatural sort of giants stomping around, killing at a tremendous pace, what a fearful place this would be. Verse 8. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord, and this is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, so he was righteous. He was perfect in his, and there it is, generations. Interesting that Moses was prompted by the Spirit to say generations. So he would say he has a hierarchy. He has a lineage. Oh, good for him. But is it deeper than that? And I believe it is. Genetics, genealogy, which makes more sense to us today. Are there people that are trying to mess with the human genome even now? And wouldn't that also be like the days of Noah? Well, anyway, Noah walked with God, verse 10. And Noah begot three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. Verse 13. And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me. For the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Destroy them with the earth. Verse 14. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. We don't really know what gopher wood is. Some people say maybe it's a cypress, maybe it's a pine. We don't know what it is. But evidently it was a great supply where he was. Make rooms in the ark. Cover it inside and outside with pitch, which is an oil or a tar of some kind that probably was around the region. And by the way, that would make sense because somewhere near this is probably near what we would consider today the Middle East. And so that would mean that there would be large deposits of oil-type products seeping from the earth. And is there a lot of oil in the Middle East? Yeah, interesting. Verse 15. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits. Now, a cubit typically was the elbow to the point of the middle finger. So they averaged that out. And then something called a royal cubit was the elbow to the finger plus four fingers. And so some people have said, well, how long is it? Some cubits are bigger than others, so that would be anywhere from 18 to 24 inches. But what these guys did at the Ark Encounter is they went for something called the royal cubit, and that was 22.4 inches. So they settled on that. So based on that cubit, how long is this? 510 feet. The length of the ark, 300 cubits. That's going to be the royal cubits, so 510 feet. Its width shall be 50 cubits. That's 85 feet wide. And its height shall be 30 cubits, 51 feet tall, 5 stories tall. If you do the math on that, you know how much space that is? Remember the quaint little one I told you about earlier, or I showed you? Yeah, the little ark bobbing up and down, and the kind old Noah. And boy, was he crowded on that ark. And so with that notion floating in the heads of most people, they're all, the Bible's got to be crazy. No way. You do the math on 500 feet long, 85 feet wide, 50 feet high. That is, and if you take into account the narrowing at the bow and the stern, that is 1.88 million cubic feet. Said in another way, go ahead, there's the cross section. Said in another way, that's 500 railroad cattle cars. Those cattle cars can take 100 animals per car. Go. Let's look around the interior, shall we? Look at the size of that. You are actually on the inside of a scale model of the Ark of Noah. And you can see down to the level number one, middle, levels 2 and 3 and above. By the way, 500 railroad cattle cars could transport easily 120,000 sheep-sized animals. Is that a lot of sheep? It is. Now remember too, Noah did not go hunting all these creatures. God brought them. So some people say, well, were the dinosaurs on the ark? The answer is yes, they were. Oh, wow. What about the great big ones like the brachiosaur and those? You can't fit one of those on there. Who brought them? God did. And remember, can you bring a juvenile of a brachiosaur? Yes, and it would fit quite nicely in there. So let's average from the very largest animals to the very small. You can average them to approximately the size of, as it were, of a sheep. This ark could accommodate 120,000 sheep or medium-sized animals. Now, what about those huge dinosaurs, the sauropods? In verse 20, and also next chapter, verse 9, the pairs, quote, came to Noah. And that means that God brought them. And if he wanted dinosaurs, and he probably did, he got the little ones before they got very big. Also, let's cruise through the interior. Go ahead. Look at the size of that. You're looking down the middle. If you want more information, you can go to answersingenesis.org. Answersingenesis.org. YouTubes and videos that will take you all through this. And then when they were thinking about how they would do it, they came up with ingenious ways of how you would feed all these animals. They also noticed that if you wanted to, in the bow and in the stern, if you opened up what's called a moon pool, in other words, an opening at the bottom of the ship, but then it's sealed up like a smokestack, so it's not going to sink the ship, but water would come in a little ways into that sort of moon pool. Does that make sense? Here's the hull, and here are these two holes. And the holes are made like a well. And so what that means is, now let me turn the ship this way. In those two holes, the water would be going up and down inside of that cylinder. Does that make sense? Now, when it goes up inside the cylinder, it would compress air at the top. Air would rush down the bottom and cool and vent all three floors. They figured that out. Would Noah have too? So we don't have time to go into how it would be very feasible to clean these cages and to provide enough food for all of these animals for a year, because that's how long everybody was on the ark, for about a year. Let's keep cruising. Go ahead. Here is one of the floors with the animals, and there is a person. Part of the fun when you go to this ark encounter is you have to find Noah and then Mrs. Noah and then Shem and Mrs. Shem, and each one of them are doing something different, and that's part of the fun. What's he doing? What's Shem doing there? So you can see some of the bird cages go. And here's one of the stores, the floors, I should say, with a little larger animals. And they have live animals that are in there. And then they have other animals that they have fashioned. So they have some, they have the dodo bird in there, extinct to us. And little baby mammoths, woolly mammoths, extinct to us. Go ahead, go. And there's looking down one of the floors. That's bamboo on the bottom. The flooring on the bottom. Pretty amazing. That's 500 feet long of that on both sides. Go. But if you want to take a video tour of this amazing ark, and they will tell you all of these amazing things, how it is quite feasible that every animal could be represented in that ark. You go to answersingenesis.org, and just follow the videos, and it really is a whole lot of fun. We'll leave it there for a second. Verse 16. You shall make a window for the ark, and you shall finish it to a cubit from above. That's part of your ventilation system. And set the door of the ark on its side. You shall make it with lower, second, and third decks. So at that circumference and that size, times three, that is a whole lot of floor space. Verse 17. And behold, I myself am bringing floodwaters on the earth to destroy from under the heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything that is, by the way, everything which is the breath of life. What are the poor fishies going to do? They don't have lungs. They're going to be fine. They're going to be in the water. And also, too, people say, well, that's stupid because you can't put freshwater fish in a saltwater environment. Ha, your theory is stupid, Steve. Well, remember, salt in the water is a long process of rain dumping on the continents, the rivers picking up salts and sediments, and then depositing them in the ocean. The sun evaporates pure water, and then the whole cycle comes over. The point of it is the ocean salty now? Yes. Was it salty then? No, it was fresh. So there was no distinction between saltwater fish and freshwater fish. Verse 18, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall go into the ark, you and your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark. I thought you said God brought them. God brings them to the boat, and then who puts them inside of their various pens? Adam does that because he had built for them. To keep them alive with you, and they shall be male and female. Ha, say the skeptics. How'd Noah get animals from Australia or the Americas, dude? There's a huge ocean. There is now, but there wasn't then. And in the millennial reign, as I said earlier, there's going to be no oceans, just one continent again. Pangaea is going to be a reality. Likely pre-flood Earth was in the same one continent situation. And the majority of the floodwaters, remember, they shoot out from the oceans under the one continent, crack it apart into their current plate tectonics. Verse number 20, of the birds after every kind. By the way, kind, this is very important. Humans take kinds and then we sort of subdivide them into various species. I'll show you that in a moment, what I'm talking about. Here's what God says, after their kind, not their subspecies. Kinds of animals after their kind, not their subspecies. And of every creeping thing on the earth after its kind. Two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. Ha, say the skeptics again. Don't you know, dummy, that there are more than 7 million different kinds of species? You can't get all those on an ark, dude. God said, bring a dog. How many dogs are there? You might get a kick out of this. Go ahead. Well, today there's lots of dogs. Look at that. Do you know that the National Kennel Club registers over 350 species of dog? Did God bring, or did Noah have to grab a Great Dane and then a Chihuahua? No. He grabbed a dog. Not all the subspecies. Or how about this? What about horses? Look at horses. Go. There are between 500 and 700 species of horses. God didn't say, go get an Arabian and they'll get a, go get a falabella, bala, bala, little baby horse. He didn't say that. He said, get a what? A horse. These are subspecies. That's why God says, after kind. I was amazed to find this out. Go ahead. Do you know that paleontologists would believe that there's not one T-Rex, Tyrannosaurus? There are 9 that they say are subspecies of Tyrannosaurus. Go get you a Tyrannosaurus. Not all of those. Does that make sense? And what about this one too? Do you know that of all the species of the millions and millions, 75 to 80% of all species are insects? Because there's like a jillion different kinds of beetles. God said, get how many beetles? Just get 2. So people who say they hear off the top of their head there's kajillions and kajillions of species, do we understand that kinds versus typically today's species are a very different animal? So when God said, I want you to go get those, and this, let me break it down for you even a bit more. The total number of kinds today, so that would be dogs, cats, horses, etc., not the subspecies, are about 4,000 kinds. And if you go into the fossil record, you're going to find fossils of animals that don't exist today. Some of the sauropods or the dinosaurs, but so is the dodo and the woolly mammoth and what have you. So that is accounting for another 2,900 of kinds. So you put that all together and add some to save the cushion. You are talking on Noah's Ark, there would be approximately 7,000 different kinds. Time 2, there's 14,000 animals. Go. Remember how big this ark was? 1.88 million cubic feet, 500 railroad cattle cars. There were approximately 7,000 kinds in Noah's day. In Noah's day, times 2 is 14,000. how much animals on three levels could you get? 14,000? Try 120,000. I've tried to make a case that the ark is very plausible. And thank you, Ken Ham, and everybody who actually built one. And if you ever get a chance to go there, I would highly encourage it and check it out and walk through and then be amazed one more time that your Bible is accurate. See the sail on the back of the vessel? The bow is in the front and the to your right, and the stern is in the back. And that little sort of sail of sorts could very well. Remember, it's got a flat bottom, more or less. That is a barge, mostly. It didn't have to travel anywhere. All it had to do was stay afloat. And that little fin in the back could have very well oriented the front of the ship into the waves. If there's enough wind to make waves, then that sail would have been quite an interesting architectural feature that would have pointed the bow into the waves. Just to finish up, verse 21, and you shall take for yourselves all the food that is eaten, and you shall gather it to yourself, and it shall be food for you and for them. Thus Noah did according to all that God had commanded him, and so he did. And it's very, very plausible. Amen?